What's up, world? I'm Matt Newberg from Hungary, and this is The Feed. Each episode, we'll dive into conversations with the industry insiders who are leveraging technology to shape the way we eat.
On today's episode of The Feed, I sat down with Art Sebastian, VP of Digital Experiences at Casey's, live from the grocery shop floor in Las Vegas. In this episode, we'll chat about the role of convenience stores in a world of quick commerce, how Casey's has leveraged loyalty to drive customers to order more prepared food, alcohol, and groceries, and the digitization of the supply chain. Full disclaimer, I'm a very small shareholder of Casey's stock. And now, my interview with Art Sebastian. Alrighty, I'm very excited to be joined today by Art Sebastian. He's the VP of Digital Experiences at Casey's, the third largest convenience chain in the U.S., operating 2,400 stores throughout the Midwest and the South, that just so happens to be the fifth largest pizza chain in the country. Prior to Casey's, Art spent the past few decades working for retailers like Albertsons, Meijer, and Jewel Osco. Art, great to have you on board.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
We're live from Grocery Shop. I'm excited to say that this is the first in real life podcast I think I've ever done for Hungry. So thank you for making history here.
Awesome.
Well, you have a fascinating background in grocery and you've been in the game for a minute. So I'd love to hear about your background and kind of how you got to the tech side of the C-store biz.
Yeah, you know, I started working in a grocery store when I was 15 years old. It was really just a job to get some cash to pay for my car insurance and gas. And then over the next couple of decades, it became a career. I started, you know, facing aisles and shagging carts and then working various departments within the grocery store until I ran a grocery store. And then after college, just sort of continue to move up through the ranks. I did an ops job, a merchandising job. I've had the opportunity to move around the country a bit. I'm born and raised in Chicago, spent some time in Philadelphia, moved to Boise, Idaho when I was with Albertsons, moved to Minneapolis, and then came back to Chicago. After the first half of my career being in retail, I shifted over into consulting. I spent about 6 years consulting CPGs, helping them with data analytics, marketing mix, price and promotion. And then after about 6 years, I actually moved into the CPG side of the business and worked for Kraft Foods. So it's a little different when you work on the brand side. You know, you're building brand love. You're selling to retailers to reach the consumer. So I learned a ton from that and also had the opportunity to see retail broadly across North America because I dealt with every retailer. And then I came back to retail. I came back and joined Meijer to head up digital and really get that program up and running. We started with e-commerce and then built out multiple experiences across their digital ecosystem. And now I'm about to celebrate 4 years with Casey's. And really excited about the opportunity I have. I get to work in on the business side. I get to work on the marketing side. And then, of course, get to work on the tech side. So I love all of those pieces and bringing them together in one role.
Amazing. I know that not everyone is going to be familiar with Casey's. So, you know, I actually had the pleasure, as I was telling you earlier, of being having a friend's wedding in Iowa and got to see Quick Trip and Casey's and a bunch of these wonderful convenience chains. And, you know, what really stood out to me with Casey's was all the different occasions you guys serve and how connected everything was. And the fact that basically the majority of your stores are in rural towns with less than 5,000 people. So you really are kind of the food solution for so many households, online and offline. So I guess walk us through a brief history of the Casey's General Store, as it was formerly called. Some of the acquisitions you've done over the years and where you're and how you got to the point of being the third largest and the category and the fifth largest when it comes to pizza.
Yeah, you know, it really is a great story, a great success story. And sometimes we joke when we talk with friends and stuff that Casey's is the biggest retailer no one heard of, based in Ankeny, Iowa, suburb of Des Moines, and just has grown rapidly over the last 54 years. It was really around the 50th year anniversary that the company took a pause and we looked ourselves in the mirror and asked the hard question, which is, how are we going to stay relevant for the next 50 years? And as a leadership team, we said, we've got to modernize this brand. Everything from the look and the feel and how we show up in communities and how our guests engage us. And You know, we said we want to be a much more contemporary version of ourselves. And I was hired to lead digital, which would be the first expression of this modern and contemporary Casey's. So, you know, that's really kind of the company's been wildly successful. And then, you know, obviously the environment just gets more competitive and channel blurring is occurring. And so we wanted to make sure that the company remained successful. And so that's why we've invested in digital. I got to give big props to, you know, some of the early leaders in the company who did a few things that make us stand out. One is they launched pizza. So they put kitchens in our stores and built this amazing handmade pizza program. And now you've got a lot of other players trying to figure out how to put a kitchen in their store and how to build that into their business model. Well, we've had it for 30 years. So that's a really big deal. Another thing that leaders did a while back is made the decision to self-distribute. So we have three distribution centers. You know, we're responsible for negotiating deals with vendors, procuring the product, moving it through the supply chain. And that makes a big difference in your business model, specifically in the last, you know, year or two when we saw all this supply chain disruption. And then the other piece is that the business decided a while back that we would be all company-owned and operated stores, no franchisees. Mm-hmm. And so when you do business with Casey's and we say we're going to do something, we can, you know, live up to that commitment and execute programs.
Very interesting. So you're literally just on stage talking about this digital transformation, and there's a long time frame here. Just like quickly, you're now at 5.5 million users on the program, so congratulations. But how did you get to that point? What did you start with? And how do you think that this app, or this program, embraces both the concepts of omni-channel and then this other concept of omni-vertical, of like fuel, prepared food, convenience staples / grocery, whatever you call it, merchandise?
Yeah, we're just so thrilled with Casey's Rewards. And like you said, we surpassed 5.5 million members just a handful of weeks ago. And we launched the program back in January of 2020 during our 3-year strategic plan investor day share out on Wall Street at the NASDAQ. And it was all excitement, and we were off and running with the program, and we saw enrollment, and our guests were excited about it and joining and transacting with us. And then the world turned upside down in March, right? For everybody, not just us, but the whole world. And we were very fortunate that we had put the program out there and gained some early traction. And we were able to continue it as a business. We continued to drive the rewards program over the last 2 or 3 years here. And like I said, it's drove enrollment. More importantly, we're seeing very active users of the program. We see over 50% of our 5.5 million in our stores on a monthly basis.
Wow.
So highly engaged, which we are thrilled with. And the no-brainer here is when you peel the onion back and start digging into the data, what it tells us is our most valuable guests in terms of interacting with us and revenue are the ones that shop us omni-channel. So they're in the app, they're on our website, and they're physically in our stores and at our pump. And they're what you called omni-vertical, meaning they use us for everything we have to offer: fuel, groceries, dairy, frozen, and our prepared food business. So when you think about the experiences we have, whether it's physical or digital, our Casey's Rewards program is the thread that pulls it all together. And it allows us to connect with our guests and our rewards members and communicate the overall value prop. And we're influencing behavior, we're motivating behavior, and that's turning into real results.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to kind of dig in there. You know, what do some of those segments look like? You know, you're driving people who, I think it's like 70% of your sales are at the pump, right? And the rest of it is food and alcohol and all that good stuff. How are you taking those customers that are maybe fuel only and getting them to tack on, you know, go inside the forecourt and maybe try a slice of pizza and then maybe graduate them to, yeah, you know, family large pie on a weekend?
Yeah, I think for us, the good thing is that we don't have a lot of fuel only guests. So we don't see a lot of fuel-only transactions. There are certainly some, and those are opportunities for us. But, you know, as you noted earlier on the chat here, that, you know, we operate in some of these small towns, and in many cases we serve our guests, you know, everything, all the food, all the groceries. And so they you know, we're their option. Otherwise, they've got to drive a far away. So we don't see a lot of fuel-only transactions. But what we're doing is a couple things. One, in the now term, is how do we leverage data to inform the actions we need to take with our guests? And so when a guest transacts with us at the pump but doesn't transact with us in the store, we have that data and we can put that guest in a segment that gets the right marketing to sort of influence their behavior differently the next time. So, you know, we've got the data looking backwards and we're marketing looking forward. Where I want to get us to, and we're not there yet, is real-time data. As soon as a guest fills up their gas and they put the nozzle back into the dispenser, we should have that data and we should ping them an offer for something that we're 100% confident they like because the data shows that they buy it often. So we're working our way to kind of real-time communication. And then the other piece is location detection. So this is work that's in our roadmap at the moment, and we're looking forward to getting this capability out there soon. But for our rewards members, we'll know where you're at, whether you're in close proximity to the store, you're on the forecourt, or you're inside our store, and we should contextually deliver the right messages and offers at that moment to, again, influence behavior. And then one last one, and because there's just so much in the space, and like the holy grail is getting every guest that fills up at the gas pump to come inside and buy something, right? Everyone wants to do that, is we have this opportunity to also modernize our fuel pump experience, right? Make it easier and faster to pay and fill up your pump and get out. But also when a guest authenticates at the pump, we should deliver relevant content on the screens. And so we're thinking our way through that opportunity as well.
Interesting. On that thread real quick, do you have any knee-jerk reactions on electric vehicles?
yeah, that's obviously a hot topic, right, for everybody. And I can promise you this, it is a thing. And we are paying lots of attention to it. We actually have several locations with EV chargers. But the reality is that even though we're seeing an increase in the U.S. of EV, you know, sales out the door, the number of EVs on the road is still really, really small. And they're seeing some growth along the coast, but really hasn't penetrated the Midwest in any sort of scale. Yeah, yeah. We sent a bunch of our leaders to Norway. A bunch of our leaders went there. Norway is the most highly penetrated country in the globe for EV. Right. And they came back with the key insight that it's still going to take some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know personally I charge at home, so yeah. I don't, and unless I'm on a road trip, I'm not stopping in to charge. And if I am, it's going to be, you know, a proprietary supercharger station, but that's a whole Tesla versus everyone else debate. Anyway, save that for a different show. But can you benchmark where you are on that penetration of like loyalty versus, you know, someone like a Starbucks? Like how many people are actually across your transactions, like what does this look like? I know you can't give me the exact percentage of all transactions, but like how do you benchmark this?
Yeah, we certainly benchmark so that we can see where we stand relative to the industry leaders. And, you know, right now I said, you know, more than 50% of our members are in our stores every month. That's a high bar to set, but, you know, we offer lots of things for our guests and members to buy and interact with. So, you know, that's a really high bar. Most of the industry players, leading industry players in the coffee business or hotel business or restaurant business, they tend to look at 90-day or 6-month marks. So we've done that work to see how we stack up against them, and we pull their data from their earnings release and all that type of stuff. And we have a guest base, a member base that is more engaged than the industry leading players. Now, I will say that with the caveat that our program is smaller because we're comparing ourselves against large established national brands, but I'd say we're in good company when it comes to engagement. And to me, that engagement means that our guests are responding to our programs and we're developing and deepening this relationship, which at the end of the day is really the goal.
So on that thread, like there's this concept of phygital, which is, I don't know, it's silly, but someone told me about it. And it's this idea of bridging the gap between online and in-store retail. So like, what are some of these examples when it comes to Casey's? And I think a lot of retailers struggle with this. They send you an offer on your app that you can only, you can't get in store. Things are not, are siloed. I mean, just talk to us about some of the messages and the, how you transact with these customers and what you're kind of unlocking there between, you know, all these different touch points.
Yeah, I mean, the two top trending words in this digital space are like seamless, right? Another one is frictionless. And so, you know, the reality is that's what we want to all build. And I would tell you now that we are not seamless and we are not frictionless. So we have tons of opportunity ahead, which I guess is cool because it's job security for me. Today, we have more assortment available in our store than we do our mobile app. So in one way, the store is advantaged over the app because there's more variety. But in the app, when I order ahead, I can pay with one tap on a saved credit card. And then when I'm transacting in the store, I got to dig through my wallet to figure out which card I need to use and dip it in a pin pad, et cetera. So in that case, digital is advantaged. You know, my goal ultimately is that we do create this seamless and frictionless experience that a guest, no matter how they transact or where they interact with Casey's, the brand shows up consistently. Now, that's a tall order to call out, and so we've got a lot of work to do. I will tell you that there's some progress we're making as we think about how to display content across screens consistently. So what I mean by that is our guests can interact on our mobile app or our website or our social media pages. They also see screens at the fuel pump, in front of our kitchen on the digital menu board, screens on our fountain soda machine, screens on our pin pad, the list goes on. And so how do we deliver the same kind of design approach and visual and messaging that the guest doesn't feel like they're, you know, interacting with two different Casey's? So that's an opportunity for us. And then one last example I'll bring out there, and this is sort of, I get a chuckle when I talk about this, but in the last couple of years, we've seen the comeback of the QR code. Who would have thought? But it came back. It sort of tempered down a bit, but it's still there. And for us, we've used that tool as a way to connect a physical customer to the digital environment. And so we found a couple of areas like where you fill up your bean to cup coffee. There's a 15 second dwell time there. And we put a QR code with some messaging, and we're finding that our guests filling up coffee will scan the QR code and interact. And that's a form of connecting a physical guest with the digital experience.
You shared some stats with me about like the percentage of customers that are coming in and scanning their phone at the POS system. Can you talk a little bit about how that rewards program works when you check out, and maybe any stats you can share about how many people actually have the app when they walk into the store and what that looks like?
Yeah, we as we launched our loyalty program, Casey's Rewards, we made this big decision to say it was a digital-first program. So there are no physical cards, there's no key fob, there's none of that. It's a digital-first, meaning our guests have to fully enroll through downloading the app or on our website. And then after that, if they choose to bring their app into the store, they can use that and scan a code. Or if they don't have a phone and they joined in at the public library on a computer, they can punch in their phone number, which is their unique identifier. So we give them easy ways to authenticate so that they can earn points and then also redeem some of the offers that we provide. So overall, we see 37% of transactions tied to our loyalty program.
Wow.
We're thrilled with that because it means that our guests are taking the time to authenticate. They see value in the program. And then as you imagine, that's creating all kinds of data and information for us to sift through so that we can continuously improve the experience.
Very cool. That's really cool. I guess one thing that you said in the last talk, we're here at Grocery Shop, just as a reminder to everyone who's not here, was that Casey's the fourth largest liquor holder in the U.S. And I guess I'm curious, like, How does alcohol play out when it comes to attachment with prepared food and grocery and some of these other categories? And I guess, what can you share about the role of alcohol? Because this is going to be a nice segue to one of my favorite topics, which is GoPuff and the rise of quick commerce and DashMart and all that stuff and the wild, wild west of food delivery. But yeah, I'd love to set that up, right, with just like the fourth largest liquor license holder in the U.S.
Yeah. So first off, for those that are not at Grocery Shop, I think you need to get the dates on your calendar now for next year, because it's an amazing show where you can network and learn and all of that stuff. So I'm happy to be here. So yeah, we're the fourth largest liquor license holder in the country, only behind Walmart, Walgreens, and CVS. And so when I rattle that off, it usually makes sense for a lot of folks. But that puts us in a really unique opportunity to provide what our guests are looking for. And I will say, as we brought on a new merchandising team over the last couple of years, we've really revamped the total alcohol category. So we've had tons of success with beer, and we have beer caves and beer coolers, and we continue to refine that assortment as the category evolves and changes. But in the really last 2 years, we've put in a proper wine and spirit section and assortment. So you can find everything from Tito's vodka to Fireball to bourbons and you know, well-priced wines ranging from, you know, your single digits all the way up to $30 a bottle. So a really great assortment range there. And for us, there's this huge opportunity to connect the alcohol category with pizza. And so, you know, we sell a significant amount of pizzas, as we've shared. We're the fifth largest pizza player. And let me ask you this question. How many people do you know that eat a pizza and don't drink something, some sort of liquid while they're eating their pizza? Right? Mm-hmm. I've never heard of one. So in essence, we should see 100% of pizzas ordered with a beverage. And we don't. Right. So we see a segment of our pizzas ordered with any liquid beverage, mm-hmm. and then a smaller segment with a CSD, a carbonated soft drink, right? Because you've got water, energy, and all these other categories. And then the smallest segment with beer. And to me, that's just an outright crime. Casey's should be your pizza and beer headquarters, which mm-hmm. is how we're thinking about positioning it. And you think about the opportunity we have during football season, Saturdays for college football, Sundays for NFL. Think about big holiday drive periods like Halloween and New Year's Eve. It's just a no-brainer to attach beer to pizza. So we're working through that. We have it available on the web and app. I think we need to continue to communicate to our guests the value prop and show them how easy it is to add them together in one order.
Let's dive in a little bit there. What does that experience look like, I guess, first party versus third party? And are you doing anything differently on your app to drive people there versus the experience of ordering on one of your partners?
Yeah, you know, we value the partners quite a bit. I mean, to me, partners have allowed us to move really quick with delivery, especially in the last couple of years here. And I think in any partnership, it allows the two players to bring the best of what they do to the table. So we build stores, we assort those stores, we have product, and delivery partners do a great job of handling the last mile. So I've got a lot of love for our delivery partners. We made our beer and seltzer assortment available on the DoorDash marketplace. That's where we started. And you know, they had an established flow in the app and age verification and all of that process down pat. And so we're seeing some growth, real growth in that category through the marketplace. We've since extended that beer and seltzer assortment to be able to be delivered when you order from Casey's. And DoorDash Drive does the delivery for us, again, leveraging their infrastructure and their process. And we're seeing a big opportunity there, meaning we sell more on the marketplace and less through Casey's. And I think it's just educating our guests that, hey, you can order this now for delivery at well over 1,000 stores. So huge opportunity. And by the way, we also have beer and seltzers currently available at, you know, over 2,000 stores for curbside pickup or in-store pickup.
Have you done any studies on the incrementality of this or the role of these various channels. Like, do you think the same customer that would have come in the store, been a loyalty customer, is somehow not aware of your, I mean, of the ability to do it in the app for some reason, or is it all like net new customers?
Yeah, it's never all net new. And if anyone says that, they might be fudging the analytics a little bit. But I will tell you that in the analyses we've done, we've seen that these marketplaces have been highly incremental for us. So we definitely like that. But when you look at our sort of marketing investment and advertising investment, it's certainly communicating to consumers we want to acquire and our current guests to order directly from us. And, you know, I think that's important because we want to have the relationship with the guests. We want to have access to the data. And so we're really steering that way. But we're learning a ton from the marketplaces. And, you know, interestingly, our guests are ordering differently from us through DoorDash and Uber Eats. It's a crazy thing that we're observing. They're ordering more groceries and sometimes grocery only orders from us through DoorDash. Hmm. And I'll tell you what, when you look at a college town and you look at orders late at night, you see some interesting orders. Those students love Snickers and ice cream and all the things.
Amazing. Well, I think it's a nice segue to one of my favorite discussion points, which is GoPuff and obviously the fast follow of DashMart. I guess we've seen them rise. We've seen them also a lot of players go out of business very quickly and have kind of seen, you know, what happens when you throw too much money at a problem and you don't have the right technology and you don't have the self-distribution and so on and so forth. In many ways, you pioneered a lot of this, it seems, but just... This is why I love talking to you, because, you know, we got to give credit where it's due. So where do you see this business, like, where did this come out of, and where do you see it going long term, and what is Casey's stance or outlook on it?
Yeah, you know, mad props to all the startups that are observing, you know, friction in how consumers live, and they're rethinking the game a bit, right? Because I say mad props to them because many of them become successful. Some obviously don't, but it pushes all of us to think differently about our business. And in this day and age, you can't take advantage of any of the business. You've got to be on your toes constantly. And so, you know, I look at what some of these companies are doing, and, you know, we all read the headlines, and there's certainly all the rage was about the growth. And then, you know, the current headlines tell a different story. And so I think, you know, if you're putting physical assets out into the marketplace and you're, you know, putting inventory in there and having staffers, but you say that it's only delivery out of the box, you've sort of limited your potential. Because when you look at brick and mortar retail across any of the big players that exist, while delivery is growing as a use case, it is still not the primary, you know, driver of sales. The primary driver of sales is still getting your customer to walk in the door and shop. And so right out of the bat, I think these business models have just sliced the business potential and said, we'll only operate in this little sliver. So, you know, and I don't know the economics of anyone's business models, and maybe that's, you know, okay. But I think they'll continue to be challenged when they sort of limit themselves. So I will tell you that we're observing what everyone's doing. We're paying lots of attention. We're thinking about, okay, well, you know, what does this mean to us? You know, we've asked ourselves the question, do we need to get in this game? Do we need to change something that we're doing? And for me, I make it a habit of not, you know, breaking my neck every time something happens or you read something. We're aware and seek to understand, but certainly stay very focused on our mission and driving results.
It's interesting because, you know, you look at what GoPuff is able to do with BevMo, and it's still not a very integrated retail experience. Like, there's still this knowledge of, there's like BevMo customers who've been shopping there for years, and then you have GoPuff customers who are completely different audience, and I don't know how that whole, I don't have any real insight there other than just my own perspective, but it's technologists trying to become retailers, and then you have retailers hiring people like yourself to become technologists. That's like, what's harder?
Yeah, I mean, it's all challenging, which is why we have a big thriving industry and lots of places to go work, I guess. But, you know, I think staying focused on the consumer and what their needs are and how you want to solve those needs, I think that's where you got to pay attention to. And then, you know, what's your business model, right? Where are you going to drive the most value for whoever your stakeholders are is the big question I'd ask. I mean, when you see tech companies stepping in to grab physical locations, you start to wonder, what are they learning inside? What are they seeing in their economics that push them to completely flip their business upside down and start acquiring physical assets, right? When you do that, now you have to have loss prevention guys, you need to have, you know, maintenance people, you need all these staffing that you didn't have when you were a digital-only business. So it's a significant shift. And, you know, as a practitioner of retail, anytime I read a headline, my mind goes into multiple directions, right? I don't just get impressed with the headlines, even my own that I put out there. I start to challenge and question, okay, what's happening beneath the headline? And then for us as retailers, I think it's really natural to have a brick and mortar store and begin to augment it with technology. And everybody's really focused on building these customer facing experiences. That's where all the action's been. I would tell you that I'm going to suspect that more action's going to shift towards digitizing the store and the employee experience, just as we did for customers. We're going to put more of an emphasis on the physical store and the employees running the store and digitize all of that.
Yeah, I'm curious if you can dive in a little bit more. Like you're not talking about procurement per se. You're talking about like something like cooler screens on the shelves or like something around the four walls.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about a couple of things, right? I don't want to get too IT here because I'm really a marketer, but you know, you can digitize all the hardware and software and shift towards edge computing in a store, virtualize a store. Right, move it into the cloud, virtualize it, make it much more nimble, optimize hardware. Like there's a ton, that's a whole nother discussion, but there's that effort. And then there is this long list of manual tasks that employees in a store do to operate it and to serve their guests. So what if you could take those manual tasks and automate it? Or what if you can replace every bit of paper with an app custom designed for an employee operating their store?
I see. Yeah. Really like focus, help them like do the most creative work that humans were meant to do amidst a labor shortage where we can't hire enough workers.
Right.
It's interesting. I did an interview with Standard AI who believes that like a lot of the software they're building on in the autonomous world of autonomous checkout is going to enable this kind of work, right? They can relegate a lot of the mundane rote tasks that store clerks have to do with an inventory and allow them to really focus on, you know, greeting the customer. I'm curious, like, having been in the game so long, what do you think other C-store operators listening to this, you know, 65% of the industry are independents and 90% of Americans live within what, a 10-minute drive of a convenience store. There is no reason why these companies should not be able to do something similar to what GoPuff or DashMart is doing. What are the table stakes that they could do, you know, when it comes to maintaining that competitive edge? What are some of the things that they need to be doing if they're not already thinking about it?
You know, I got mad respect for independents because, you know, their livelihoods are on the line. They're owning and operating these stores and competing against big players. So mad props to those folks. I think there's a lot to be said for what you can learn from really big players. I mean, I do it myself, learning from what Walmart and Amazon are doing, right? And so independents can look at what we've done and learn and determine how to evolve their experiences. I think there are lots of technology solutions out there. They may not be enterprise grade, but they might be white label. There are partners that you can leverage to fast track and get into the digital game. And so I would encourage those independents to do so. But at the end of the day, you know, retailing is about really great customer service and customer relationships. And so if you can find ways within your own ecosystem to delight a customer, to know them by name, to ensure that they come back to you versus the other guy down the road, I think you have a chance at winning. But I would challenge, you know, all retailers of shapes and sizes to really think through digital. Feels weird saying that in 2022 because you'd think that everyone's already done it. But the reality is not everyone has gone all the way to bright. And so I'd say start your journey. The sooner you do it, the sooner you get started, the sooner you can reap benefit.
And you don't need an insane budget, right? Like there's a small, medium, and large size of all of this, right?
Absolutely. And even an extra small if you can be really creative.
What do you think about like this? So one of the things about GoPuff is that because you're in this like hermetically sealed warehouse, you know exactly everything that's coming in and everything that's coming out, unlike an Instacart experience or something else where there's out of stocks and replacements and there's not a real grip on the store. Like, what are your thoughts on this idea of like real-time inventory? Do you think the C-store industry can get to a point where we are, you know, you mentioned real-time marketing messaging. Can we get to the real-time supply chain side of this?
We certainly hope so. We do. And so it's high on our list and it's certainly in our roadmap. Timing is TBD because it's a big task and is has tons of dependencies on other systems and other projects moving along. But when I was at Meijer, I operated stores that were 150,000 to 200,000 square feet, right? That's how large those stores were. And I was fortunate to experience that. And then I joined Casey's and our stores are 3,000 to 5,000 square feet. But you know what? We have the same opportunities and the same issues in the box, regardless of the size. One of them, as it relates to assortment, is you just have less days of supply on the shelf, and you can run out of stock. And so for us, we really need what we call perpetual inventory. We need to know what's in the store at any given time or day. One, so we can replenish quicker and get that store back in business. But two, if we decide to display that assortment and make it available for order, we don't want to disappoint our guest, have them order, you know, something and it not be on the shelf to be fulfilled. So it's a priority for us. I think in the next, 1 to 2 years, we'll make some progress there.
Awesome. And then just to set everyone's, give everyone a sense of the offering, how many SKUs roughly are we dealing across these different segments of, like how much prepared food, how much grocery, how much alcohol, or like what's the total SKU count?
Yeah, we got anywhere between 2,500 and 3,500 SKUs in our store.
Total. Right, and it's about 5% private label, which is growing fast.
Yep.
Okay, very cool. And then, and that's inclusive of like pizza and everything else.
Yeah, the 5% of inside sales that is private label is just our grocery business.
Okay, got it.
So, as we look at our business, we call it inside, which is grocery and prepared food, and then we call it fuel. So we look at those business distinctly because there's some dynamics happening with fuel, as we all know, with the cost and the pricing of fuel. And so we got to isolate that and study that business. And then when you look at the inside, we look at grocery and prepared foods. And, we sell more of one than the other, but the profit ends up kind of balancing each other out pretty nicely. So they're both really important businesses. And then to what we talked about earlier, once you get a guest inside the store, we're doing everything we can to influence that guest to shop across grocery and food.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to also, kind of as we near the end of the conversation, to talk about the self-distribution network as kind of a moat here. And like, what does that look like? Because I've never seen these. I imagine they're huge facilities.
Yeah.
You said you have three of them?
We have three of them, yep. One in Ankeny, Iowa, where we started and where we're headquartered. One in Terre Haute, Indiana, and one in Joplin, Missouri. And so we're fortunate to have three of them. They are equally servicing our 2,400 stores. Wow. Across the footprint.
Yeah. So I guess what I want to understand is like, obviously there's a real impact to your margin here. And Dan Folkman from GoPuff, who's also been on this podcast, was just mentioning like why a lot of these quick commerce players kind of came and went because they didn't have the proper distribution set up, right? We've even seen like in places like Amsterdam, there's like various quick commerce players that have been getting a lot of pressure to consolidate the number of drops coming in from suppliers because it's creating so much noise in the neighborhood and the government just hates like Gorillas and Getir and all these companies coming in. So, and I just don't think this is something that gets talked about a lot in the industry specifically as it relates to quick commerce, but you're a good analogy, and you're fairly analogous to this industry as well. But like, what does it unlock on the back end for you guys, and then what does it unlock for the customer at the end of the day?
You mean to be self-distributed?
Yeah.
You know, I think it puts a lot of the control in our own hands. We're not tied to a supplier or a wholesaler or a distributor. We can control the end-to-end supply chain, everything from deciding what we will carry, you know, how we will order it from our vendor partners, and then how we will push it from the DC to the store. So we own it end-to-end. Now, it certainly comes with increased investment and cost to operate it all, so you've got to have that skill. You got to be disciplined with process, and it's a lot of responsibility. And when you self-distribute, you've got all kinds of assets, and you've got a fleet of trucks, and you've got to have logistics systems and supply chain and picking systems. And we are in the very, very, very early stages of thinking through, how do we digitize the supply chain, right? I mean, we've got a great leadership team in place and good folks who are servicing our stores and our guests, but there continues to be this opportunity to take the idea of digitizing and modernizing and move it into the supply chain as well. For our guests, it means that, you know, we'll be in stock more often. It means that we can drive costs down and then lower pricing potentially. So I think there's value for the end consumer in us having our own supply chain.
Very interesting, and also very, very major key here as far as when we're talking about inflation and the various levers you have to pull.
Yeah. I think one of the things that sets Casey's apart is the diversity in our business model in terms of what we sell, and then how much of it we're in full control over, like the company owned and operated, our distribution centers, our own kitchens, our own digital experiences. We own the experience, and we've got this diversity. So if a large pizza player were to, you know, have an issue procuring cheese, they're out of business. If we run out of cheese, we'll sell more pop and chips, right? So you get the picture. I mean, that's certainly an exaggeration, but we have various levers to pull to drive our business, and we can change the mix of those levers accordingly. So we're just in such a unique spot. I feel so humbled to be able to be part of the Casey's leadership team, because there's really something special here.
Amazing. As we kind of close out here, you mentioned a couple of things: real-time inventory, digitizing the supply chain, location-based, like, I don't know, geofencing or more contextual awareness in the store. Is there anything else that you're excited about, let's say, the next 5 years that you really think? I mean, there's so much on your plate. It seems like you have the entire store, every display, every like fuel pump. But let me think about biggest bang for buck as far as ROI and investment there. What are some of the most impactful things? Anything else come to mind?
Yeah. So there's obviously lots to cover, lots of ground to cover. But if you were to push me to say, tell me about one thing, right? I would tell you that my job is to build relationships between the Casey's brand and consumers. That is it, is to build the relationship. And the you know, most prominent vehicle to do that is the loyalty program, Casey's Rewards. It's the tool at which we connect. But, you know, when I talk about relationships, I sort of bring this analogy of, you know, everyone's relationships with their spouses, their kids, their family members, their best friends. And I ask them, well, think about that relationship. And when you think about it, it's like, I know them. I care about them. I anticipate their needs. Nothing will tear us apart, right? And so how do you take some of that thought process into what we do as a business and establish this connection between Casey's and our guests, so that there's this deep relationship? We anticipate each other's needs. We respect each other. We value each other. And I think when you have that, companies can be very resilient. You can stand in the face of a pandemic or inflationary environment or, you know, global turmoil or whatever it might be. So there's a lot to do that, right? I gave you some philosophy and ambition there, but first party data set, growing it, enriching it with second party data, being obsessed with growing your first party data so that you can build your relationship, having the technology stack to facilitate all the integrations and personalizations of interactions, hiring the right talent that can, you know, share the strategic vision and put hands on keyboard to bring it to life, right? So I mean, it's just, there's a lot there, but it's an exciting time in this industry.
Art, this has been a really fascinating conversation. I've learned a lot, and I definitely need to find another excuse to get myself back to Iowa. So thank you so much. As I do with all guests, I'd love to give you the opportunity to plug anything Casey's related. If you have any roles you're hiring for on the tech side, if you have, tell people how to order.
Yeah.
Now's your time.
Yeah. You know what I'd say? Download our app, join our journey. If you're in tech or marketing and you're looking for a new career change, hit me up. We're hiring tons of roles. We're experiencing rocket ship growth, and we'd love to talk to you. And then if you ever want to come to Iowa, pizza's on me.
Amazing. Well, thank you again, Art, and enjoy the rest of your grocery shop.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And if you're curious to get a firsthand look at the cutting edge of food and tech, check out hungry.tv. That's Hungry with No You, where you can join in on live conversations like these or sign up for the free weekly newsletter.